Good morning, church. So very good to see you this morning. As always, I love you and I appreciate you. I want to ask you, does anybody suffer from this phobia? Hexacosioe hexaconta hexaphobia. Practice that all week. That's a tough one. Which actually means the fear of the number 666. I'm sure that there are a lot of people who know very little about the book of Revelation, but know or at least are somewhat familiar with the number 666, with the idea of the mark of the beast, and even have some fear over that. And I can understand why there would be a fear over that number, and whether or not you see that number. There will be people, maybe you have done this before, maybe you've been shopping and you've had a receipt and the number was $6.66, and you wanted to buy something else to add it to it or take something off of your ticket so that you didn't end up with that number. So there's a fear over this because there is a general understanding that there's something bad about that number. But here's the thing. As we said last week, there's a lot of fear over the book of Revelation, and we don't want to be scared about Revelation, but we do want to be sobered by it. And I actually believe that some people are scared of 666, but may not be properly sobered by what it represents. It's one thing to have sort of a superstitious fear of this number. It's another thing to really understand what the number represents or what this idea is all about and be properly sobered by it. I don't want any of us to worry when we have a receipt that says $6.66. But I do hope that we will all be sobered by the idea that John is communicating. Symbolic language is really not supposed to be confusing. It's really not even supposed to be mysterious. We use symbolic language. It really depends on you being familiar with the language and the culture in which those symbols are being used. I was thinking about some of the animals that we use symbolically. If you talk about an owl, for some reason, we think owls are smart, wise. Yeah, absolutely. So we think about owls, we think about wisdom, we think about knowledge, we think about learning. If we think about a dove, we probably are thinking about peace, right? Peace. And if you think politically, if you think about the opposite of a dove, it would be a hawk, right? A hawk. So somebody that is a dove or it's described as a dove, we might say that, well, they're a person of peace, and somebody that's a hawk would be somebody who's anxious or willing to go to war and to fight. We also obviously have symbolic meaning for the bald eagle in our culture. Donkey means something in our culture. An elephant means something in our culture. In fact, you could probably play a game. I won't play that game with you this morning, but you could probably play a game where you create a mythical beast and mix and match different symbols like the owl and the dove and the hawk and the elephant and the donkey and the bald eagle, and you would know what a person was talking about, wouldn't you? If you described a being that had all of those characteristics or it had some of those characteristics, you would know what someone was talking about. And it wouldn't be that the person was picturing an animal that actually looked like that, because that would kind of miss the point, wouldn't it? What you're saying goes deeper than that. It goes deeper than a drawing or a photograph or even a mental image of that being, because all of those animals, all of those creatures have certain symbolic meaning in our language and culture. And the same is true with the people that were receiving John's book of Revelation. These seven churches in Asia Minor were familiar with the type of literature that he was using, which is called apocalyptic literature. They were familiar with the literature. They were familiar with the symbols, with the images, with the ideas that he was portraying. And it wasn't about trying to figure out, well, what would this literally look like? In fact, I fed the beast of Revelation 13 to AI and said, hey, create an image that looked like that. It had no idea what to do with it, no clue what to do with it. It didn't look anything like what was being described. Why? Because that's not the point. The point isn't to try to figure out what would this look like literally. It's to say, what do these different symbols mean? And what does it mean when you put these things together? So one of the things is that John is counting on the fact that his audience is familiar with Daniel chapter 7. And Daniel chapter 7 describes four different beasts. And I want us to look at that. Maybe you're not familiar with Daniel 7, but In Daniel 7, we have four different beasts that probably represent four different empires. First of all, is a beast that looks like a lion with eagle's wings, and most of us interpret that as being about the Babylonian Empire. And then after that, a bear or an animal, a beast like a bear that devours much flesh, has ribs in its mouth, which represents probably the Medo-Persian Empire. And then there's a beast that's like a leopard with four heads, which probably represents the Greek Empire. And then a terrifying beast with iron teeth and ten horns. And so hundreds of years before John, these pictures, these images, this vision was part of the Jewish scriptures, the Hebrew scriptures. So they were familiar with these ideas. And so when John borrows this language, when John sees this vision, when John communicates this vision to his audience, he's counting on the fact that they're already familiar with the fact that these beasts and these animals that are representing these beasts are about empires. They're about nations and the way that nations and empires tend to behave and tend to act. So look at Romans chapter 13 and see if you notice some of that same language. Revelation 13 and verse 1. John says, I saw a beast rising out of the sea with 10 horns, again, Daniel 7, 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 diadems, 10 crowns on its 10 horns, and blasphemous names on its heads. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard, its feet were like a bear's, and its mouth was like a lion's mouth. And to it, the dragon, that's the devil, Satan, and to it, the dragon gave his power and his throne and great authority. So throughout Revelation, we see horns and diadems, and that would be representative of power and the right to rule and reign over people. But then we see these beasts, lion, and automatically, if we're familiar with Daniel 7, we're probably thinking about Babylon. We see a bear, and we're already thinking about Persia. We see a leopard, and we're thinking about Greece. And so obviously, when you would be reading this in the first century, you would be thinking about the Roman Empire. It would be hard not to think about the Roman Empire. But you would probably also be realizing that John is taking these different empires and sort of putting them all together. This is a composite image of all of these empires. It's Rome, but it's Babylon, and it's Persia, and it's Greece, and it's everybody who came before. It's any empire that acts the way that empires do. It's any kingdom that acts the way that kingdoms do. Any kingdom that exalts itself to a place of deity and demands that people worship that empire. Any empire that exalts itself and enriches itself by exploiting the world. And John is saying, you've seen this before. You've seen this in Babylon, and you've seen this in Persia, and you've seen this in Greece, and now you see this in Rome, and this is what Rome really is. Now, John is having to reveal this to the church. Why? Because some of them don't realize it. Some of them have bought into the Roman imperial propaganda, and they think Rome is wonderful. Rome has brought peace and prosperity to the world. Rome has brought the Pax Romana. Rome is good. Rome is majestic. Rome is wonderful. And John is having to reveal to them, it's not. It's a monster. It's a monster that devours. It's a monster that is enriching itself by exploiting the world. It's a monster that's like Babylon before it, that's like the Medo-Persians before it, like the Greeks before it. This is an empire like others. And you need to open your eyes and realize what it is and stop giving your loyalty and your allegiance to Rome because it is monstrous. In fact, it is so monstrous, he says, that its power and its authority and its throne come from the dragon, from the devil, from Satan. It's Satan that empowers it. It's Satan that's behind it. There's a dragon behind the beast. So there's a beast, but behind the beast, in the shadows, is the dragon that's giving it power and authority. Verse 3, one of its heads of this beast that rose up out of the sea, one of its heads seemed to have a mortal wound, but its mortal wound was healed, and the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast, and they worshiped the dragon, for he had given his authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast, and who can fight against it? I mean, there's so much happening here, isn't there? But as we've been reading the book of Revelation, hopefully we already recognize when we're reading this, we're saying, oh, the beast is a parody of the Lamb. Instead of following the Lamb, instead of worshiping the Lamb, who is Jesus, there are people who are following and worshiping the beast, who is empowered by the dragon, by Satan. They are following Rome. They are giving their loyalty and allegiance to Rome. And this is a parody of the Lamb who was slain and now stands alive forevermore. This beast has a wound that seemed to be a mortal wound, and now he's healed, again parodying the Lamb. Look at verse 5. And the beast was given a mouth uttering haughty and blasphemous words, and it was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. It opened its mouth to utter blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling, that is, those who dwell in heaven. Verse 7. Also, it was allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them. And authority was given it over every tribe and people and language and nation, and all who dwell on earth will worship it, everyone whose name has not been written before the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who was slain. Do you see what John is saying? He's directly contrasting those who follow the Lamb and those who follow the beast. For John, there's no middle ground. There's no both and. It's either or. Either you follow the beast or you follow the Lamb. Either your loyalty and allegiance is to the beast, to Rome, to the empire, or it's to the Lamb and to his kingdom. And he says, this is what it's like. He says that the beast has authority over every tribe and people and language and nation. Again, that language sounds familiar, doesn't it? Even from this book. Because the Lamb has been given authority over every tribe and people and language and nation. The beast is a fraud. The beast is a pretender. The beast is an imposter. He's trying to be what the Lamb really, truly is. And people that belong to the Lamb are giving their devotion, their loyalty, their allegiance, their faithfulness, their fidelity to the Lamb. Why? Because he is worthy. The Lamb is worthy. And because he's worthy, because he truly was slain and was raised and gave his life as a ransom for every people, every nation, every tribe, every language, those who see the Lamb, see Jesus for who he is, devote themselves willingly, give themselves willingly to the Lamb. But the beast is a monster who compels people of every nation and tribe and language. Worship me or else. Follow me or else. He threatens them, and he is a fraud. Verse 9, if anyone has an ear, let him hear. If anyone is to be taken captive, to captivity he goes. If anyone is to be slain with the sword must he be slain. Here is a call for the endurance and faith of the saints. This is what the book of Revelation is all about. It's all about wake up. Wake up. You Christians who are living in Asia Minor, some of you have already been suffering because you follow the Lamb. And others of you have not been suffering because you've divided your allegiance and your loyalty. And you've bought into the imperial propaganda that Rome is really great and wonderful and awesome, but it's not. And you need to resist the propaganda. You need to resist the way of Rome. You need to resist the way of the beast. If that means captivity, then to captivity you go. If that means death, then be faithful unto death and you will receive the crown of life. He says, this is a call for the endurance and faith of the saints. He has to say this because not every Christian living in Asia Minor is aware of this. Not every Christian in Asia Minor had ears to hear and eyes to see. They had been fooled by the beast. They had given their loyalty and their allegiance to the beast rather than to the Lamb. Verse 11, he says, then I saw another beast rising out of the earth. So the first one came out of the sea, out of the chaos of the sea, and the next beast rises out of the earth. And it had two horns like a, what, church? Like a lamb. And it spoke like a, what? A dragon. Again, do you see how when you kind of have an idea about what the animals are or what the creatures are, you see how John is creatively mixing and matching? And says, this beast that rose up out of the earth, I mean, in some ways, like a lamb, has horns like a lamb, but when he speaks like the dragon. It exercises all the authority of the first beast in its presence and makes the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast whose mortal wound was healed. And so what is the job of this second beast? To be a false prophet, right? Like the lamb, has horns like a lamb, but when he speaks, you can tell, oh, that's the voice of the dragon. That's the voice of Satan. That's the voice of the devil. And what this satanic figure, what this false prophet is telling people to do is to worship the first beast. So if the first beast is Rome and the Roman Empire, this is a false prophet who says, worship the empire. Worship the emperor. Give your loyalty and allegiance to Caesar. Bow down and worship Rome for all the wonderful things that Rome has done. And John is revealing those who speak like this are speaking like a dragon. They're speaking like the devil. They are a false prophet. Verse 13, this false prophet performs great signs, even making fire come down from heaven to earth in front of people. And by the signs that is allowed to work in the presence of the beast, it deceives those who dwell on earth, telling them to make an image for the beast that was wounded by the sword and yet lived. And it was allowed, verse 15, it was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast so that the image of the beast might even speak and might cause those who would not worship the image of the beast to be slain. All around the Roman Empire in provinces like this, there were images to Caesar, and you were expected to bow down and give your allegiance, give your reverence, give homage to, worship Caesar. And by doing so, you were worshiping not just Caesar, but the empire. So that everyone around you knew, okay, you're one of us. You can be trusted. You're on our side. You're a good citizen of Rome because you're giving your allegiance the way you're supposed to. You're giving your worship the way you're supposed to. But those who would not worship the image of the beast were to be slain. And there were a lot of people, again, who thought, what's the harm? What's the harm in just going along to get along? And I can avoid a lot of pain and I can avoid a lot of suffering if I just burn a little bit of incense to Caesar. If I pay my homage to the empire. If I just go along with my neighbors just to get along, because otherwise I'm going to suffer. Don't you know how hard it's going to be for me? And John is helping them to realize, you're like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Remember in the book of Daniel? Maybe you're familiar with that story. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were told, bow down and worship the statue. Because this is what empires do, isn't it? Empires demand that their people worship them. Give their homage to them. And when you don't, there's a threat, there's coercion. And they threw Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into the fiery furnace because they would not bow down and worship. And they said, listen, our God could save us, but even if he doesn't, we're not bowing down. And John is helping these Christians to realize in the heart of the Roman Empire that has all kinds of interesting ways of twisting and saying they're so good and wonderful and beneficent, that they're really a monster. And when you're bowing down and paying homage to this empire, you are being disloyal to the Lamb. And you have a choice. And making the right choice, being loyal to Jesus, may cost you your life. But you will receive the crown of life. Verse 16. Also, it causes all, both small and great, both rich and poor, both free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead, so that no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark, that is, the name of the beast or the number of its name. Now, again, I hope that we realize that as we're reading this, John is talking to people living in first century Asia Minor. He's not talking about microchips, okay? He's not talking about any sort of injection. He's not even really literally talking about any sort of literal tattoo. He's talking about loyalty and allegiance. In fact, there's probably a good chance that this is a parody of Deuteronomy chapter 6. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, the people of Israel were told, when you belong to God, you write His word on your hands, and you tie it between your eyes, on your head and on your hands, that you belong to God and that you follow His word. But these people, in fact, the whole world, was giving their loyalty and allegiance to the beast. And John says, because, why? Because you can't buy or sell unless you have the mark. Unless you give your allegiance to Rome, you can't participate in the economy. And so a lot of people are going along because if they don't go along, they can't buy, they can't sell. So what is this mark? Verse 18. This calls for wisdom. Let the one who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. The word for this is gematria, which was a practice of taking words, and you could take any word and assign to every letter in the alphabet a number. So if you were doing it in English, you could say A is 1, B is 2, C is 3. And then when you write a word, you could add up the value of all of the letters, and then you would have the total value of that word. So there are all kinds of words, and people have done this a million times with a million different names and words that you could make equal 666. But there's a good chance, a lot of scholars think, that it's probably a reference to Nero Caesar. But again, what is the point? The point is, when you take Caesar's name, and Nero was probably long dead, but the point is that when you, in order to buy and sell, in order to participate in the economy, in order to get along with your neighbors, in order to not be killed by the imperial forces, you take Rome's mark upon yourself. You take Caesar's mark upon yourself so that you can get along with everyone else. Then you are being disloyal to the Lamb. Look at chapter 14, verse 1. Then I looked, and behold, on Mount Zion stood the Lamb, and with him 144,000 who had his name and his father's name written on their foreheads. Again, we're not talking about injecting anything under the skin. We're not even talking about literally the Lamb's name written on our heads or written on our hands. But there's a direct contrast, isn't there? These are the two options. Either you have the beast's name on your head and on your hands, or you have the Lamb's name and His Father's name written on your head and on your hands. To whom are you being loyal? And there is a group of people who are being loyal. That was true in first century Rome, and that's been true in every generation since. That's always been true of God's people. There's always been a remnant. There have been plenty of people who have sold out in order to buy and sell, in order to preserve their life, in order to preserve their reputation, in order to preserve their livelihood. They've sold out to the empires, to Babylon, to Persia, to Greece, to Rome. But there are always a remnant of God's people who are faithful and loyal. Verse 4, it is these who have not defiled themselves with women, for they are virgins. It is these who follow the Lamb wherever he goes. Again, follow the beast, follow the Lamb. Follow the Lamb wherever he goes. These have been redeemed from mankind as first fruits for God and the Lamb, and in their mouth no lie was found, for they are blameless. Again, there's the choice. Again, we could get really complicated with all of this, and we could look at all of the numbers and all of the visions and all of the illustrations, or we could realize it's very simple. To whom does your loyalty belong? Look at verse 9 of chapter 14. Another angel, a third, followed them, saying with a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast and its image and receives a mark on his forehead or on his hand, he also will drink the wine of God's wrath, poured full strength into the cup of his anger, and he will be tormented with fire and sulfur in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. This is serious business, isn't it? Again, you don't have to be scared when you see $6.66 on your receipt. But you should be sobered by the fact that there is political and nationalistic idolatry in every generation. And we must resist it. Because there are consequences when we worship, when God's people sell out and worship their nation and their leaders and give their loyalty to those other than the Lamb who has been slain. There are consequences. And we need to be sobered by this. The first century Christians needed to be sobered by it. We need to be sobered by it. I don't think that this meant that Christians weren't allowed to have an opinion on what went on in Rome. I don't think it meant that Christians weren't allowed to, whatever extent they had the ability to, participate and be engaged in what was happening. But it did mean there is a very real danger of giving your loyalty to Rome, of worshiping Rome, of believing the propaganda that Rome really should be exalted to a place of deity. And if you give in to that and you don't resist that, God's wrath is the consequence. Verse 11, the smoke of their torment goes up forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night, these worshipers of the beast and its image, and whoever receives the mark of its name. Look at verse 12. Here, once again, here is a call for the endurance of the saints, those who keep the commandments of God and their faith in Jesus. And I heard a voice from heaven saying, write this. Blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on. Amen. Blessed indeed, says the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, for their deeds follow them. Amen. This is the whole point of Revelation. This is the whole point of the New Testament. Endure. Endure. Be faithful. Follow the Lamb wherever he goes. Resist. Resist being conformed to the world. And this is applicable to Christians who live in every generation, in every time. John wasn't talking about us. He was talking about the people of his generation. But just like every book in the New Testament, we can find application, can't we? Endure. It may not always be easy. There may be times where it is incredibly difficult to endure, to be faithful to Jesus, to give your loyalty exclusively to him. There may be even times where you are taken into captivity for your loyalty to Jesus. If you are to go to captivity, then to captivity you go. There may be times where God's people are slain. And he says, blessed are those who die in the Lord from now on, because they have rest from their labors. Their deeds follow them. Be faithful. Endure. Die if necessary. And you will rest in the arms of the Lord. But do not give in to the idolatry of the empire. So here's what we could say. The mark of the beast symbolizes self-preservation through compromised allegiance. The mark of the beast symbolizes self-preservation. That is, you can buy and sell if you give your loyalty, your allegiance, your worship, your homage to the beast. You won't get killed. You won't be harmed if you take this mark upon you. So there's a temptation to preserve your livelihood, to preserve your life by giving your allegiance to someone other than the Lamb. But this is a call for endurance. Do not take the mark upon yourself. Again, it's not one specific thing. In fact, we could, again, put it this way. Are your head and hands marked by the dragon, beast, and false prophet? Sort of a parody of the Trinity. The dragon, the beast, and the false prophet? Or by the Father, Lamb, and Spirit? John always has a way of contrasting things. Light and darkness. Life and death. There's no gray here in this discussion. There's no both and in this discussion. It's either or. Whose name is written on your head? Whose name is written on your hands? Does your loyalty, does your allegiance belong to the Lamb? John is trying desperately to get the Christians of the first century to recognize what Rome really is. Don't believe the propaganda. To resist the narrative of the culture and to remain faithful to the Lamb. That was applicable in the first century. It was applicable in the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, and today. We have to do the same. We have to recognize when we are being conformed to the culture and resist that conformity and be transformed by the renewing of our minds. We say it every week, but it's a great opportunity to remind everyone that baptism is the pledge of our allegiance to Jesus. It is the initial pledge of loyalty to die to ourselves and be buried with Jesus, to be raised up to live and walk in a new life of loyalty to Him, to receive the forgiveness of our sins and the gift of the Holy Spirit, and to begin this new life. And so maybe there's somebody here this morning, and you're ready to pledge everything, everything you are and everything you have to Jesus by being buried with Him in baptism. Or maybe there's somebody here, and you've already made that choice, but you need to recommit yourself to Jesus because you've given in and been led astray and been deceived. I think we all can confess that that's true of us, isn't it? I have. I've been blinded by and deceived by the world. I have compromised my allegiance to Jesus. And sometimes we need to publicly confess that and recommit ourselves to Him. Or maybe you're just carrying a heavy burden and it's hard to endure and you need your brothers and sisters in Christ to pray with you and pray for you. Of course, our shepherds would love to do that in the prayer room after service, or you can come forward now. Let's together we stand, sing this song.